So we enter today in the 12th chapter of the Gita, which is the 36th essay of Essays on the Gita, page 393, I think. 396. So as we know, the Gita follows this cycle of six chapters. And it's very interesting because in the first six chapters, Sri Krishna will lay a kind of a broad foundation. And then in the next six chapter, he will develop upon it. And the last six chapter will be like the, he has already given us the entire thing, but now he is filling in all the details. So that's how we see the Gita's plan. And basically, in a certain sense, the purpose of the Gita, which was to the dilemma of Arjun, that what he should do, whether he should fight or not fight the battle, is settled with the 11th chapter. Because having seen the Lord in his cosmic form and beyond the cosmic, the transcendent, he has no doubt left. So he is very clear that you give me the command. He has received the command from the Lord himself. And so now his question is settled. But then Sri Krishna has to reveal what he has to reveal, because there are many Arjunas who are going to come subsequently. Not Arjun, would be Arjunas. So he is giving us the total knowledge. But before that, now once the revelation has taken place in chapter 11, then the way and the bhakta. That's how Sri Aurobindo speaks of this. That what then is the way that man must follow, based on the great teaching of the Gita. Because there are so many ways which people can follow, and they have a right to follow. But with regard to the Gita, some salient, interesting aspects which have come up, which we don't find in the Upanishads, once again, is that in Upanishads you have meditation and worship. But bhakti comes with Sri Krishna. There is a difference between worship. Worship, we can do ritualistic worship for various reasons, wanting things for oneself. But bhakti, which exalts one to the pitch of the Godhead, bhakti is a means of actually becoming one with the Lord, that comes with Sri Krishna. And in the Gita, the true nature of that bhakti is revealed to us, not bhakti as we understand. So not that Sri Krishna is denying any of it, but he is showing us the highest possibility of the bhakta and the bhakti. So very evidently, if the divine appears before us, I take this, what is there left to ask? Except either his eternal companionship, that's one thing one would ask, that I want to be one with you. At the same time, if you become one and dissolve yourself, then you lose the joy of the companionship. So you would also want that I want to be one with you at the same time, enjoy your eternal company. So, the second thing we'll ask is eternal companionship. And the third thing we would ask is that I want to do in this world whatever you want me to do, at your bidding. Up till now I have lived life according to my foolishness, and worse still, I thought they were very intelligent things. So now I want to do what you want me to do. So that is another thing one would ask. And eventually one would ask, I want to become like you. You are my role model, my ideal. So you have to make me like you. So these are the different kinds of mukti that we find described in the Gita. And of course, Sri Aurobindo develops them. In a way, it is also the goal of his yoga, Sayujya, which is a state of union with the divine. Then Samipya. So Samipya is where there is a constant nearness of the divine. Then Salokya, a constant dwelling in the divine. It can be translated as two ways, Salokya, in the same status as the divine, or dwelling in the divine. And Sadrishya, that want to become like you. And Sadharmya, my nature should be as your nature is. Well, I don't understand you, how you act, so now I want to act just as you would act in the world. Meaning thereby, any situation, any circumstance, I want to act as you would act in that situation, that circumstance, given the consciousness in which we are. So In the Gita, the mukti that is described is not the dissolution of the Upanishadic time, which even now people stress about it. Complete dissolution. That's not the aim of the Gita. The aim of the Gita is to be even as God. As Sri Aurobindo says, that's the ultimate goal of creation, to be even as God, to fulfill God in man. So all these are... So why would such a person act? Now this is also very clear. Normally, ordinarily, we act out of ego and desire. So at the very beginning, Gita, from the very beginning, starts clearing it off. That first practice equanimity, equanimity, equanimity. You have to keep away all egoistic ambition, desire. All that has to be kept away if you really want to be an instrument of the divine or practice the yoga. So equality is stressed as a very important foundation. Knowledge is also a very important foundation, but this knowledge has nothing to do with book knowledge, except that book knowledge may prime the mind for the true knowledge. True knowledge is to see God everywhere and in everything. That's called oneness. So it's very difficult, but that's the Gita wants us. In Sri Aurobindo's yoga and its objects, Sri Aurobindo says that is the one of the first practices that one has to do. Even behind, and here, to what level this is taken. In this great destruction of the peoples and the nations, see me. Now that's the vision towards which Arjuna is invited, and all of us are invited if you really want to be even as the divine. So the knowledge is to see the divine everywhere and in everything. Before we can understand his ways, first we have to see that yes, he is there. I may not understand why things are happening the way they are happening, but when we start with this, slowly the understanding will come. So how will the understanding come? This is the knowledge. Then understanding comes as we engage in works as dedicated service to the divine. Then the understanding will come. I may read all about from the books about somebody living in a palace who did things, who is doing great deeds, but I won't know till I start serving him. When I start serving the person, then I'll get to know what is the reason why he is doing. Slowly, that's how, you know, the servants know much more about the master, about the person they are serving, than somebody from outside. Because the person who is outside only knows from the outside. He may not understand the action. But if you are a servant of the Lord, you begin to understand why he is doing what he is doing. You can almost predict that what he is going to do. I mean, because you begin to grow one with the master. That's why people ask, what should we do? Of course, there is always that element of unpredictability because divine is infinite. So we have those examples with mother and Champaklalji where he almost would say that mother would not do this, and suddenly, you know, mother would do something which is just what he had not imagined. And Champaklalji himself says that if you came in the early years, and saw that the mother would like, she didn't like artificial flowers. He said you could see it from her responses. She would take it and keep it aside. But later on, she started appreciating them because these flowers were made with lot of care and beauty. So she says, if I had left at that point of time from the ashram and then come back, I would not understand why things are happening. So the divine, of course, always there is something about him which transcends the human consciousness. But yet, the servant of the Lord begins to know. So first there is knowledge, then there is works. Knowledge is the knowledge of the one. Then through works we begin to understand the ways of working, the dynamic aspect of the divine. And then as we understand, we start growing in love, because there are many things we didn't understand earlier. But as we understand, then we see there is nothing else but love which is moving him. That's why Sri Aurobindo says that if God created hell, even that would be an act of love, because he actually loves. So these are the three steps: knowledge, because bhakti of complete self-giving is difficult for human consciousness to leap from knowledge to love. Service and works become the bridge. Because when we are serving, we are anyways thinking of the Lord, doing it with the idea and intention that, you know, we are serving him, even if the intention goes into the background. So the widest bhakti develops through service. So knowledge, works and love, these are the three elements of the yoga. And the foundations are equanimity, desireless action, constant remembrance. So Arjuna at this point, after this great vision, has a doubt. Rather, he is made to, it's not a doubt, Sri Aurobindo puts the language so beautifully. He is made to ask, because for humanity's sake. So he is made to ask a question that now for me I am clear. This is your command, you are the Lord and I am here to do your bidding. But I have heard that there are people who speak of the unmanifest, immutable Brahman as higher. Now you see, this is how human mind conceives. Manifest is lower and unmanifest is higher. That's how it appears. But actually, if you look at it even pure logically, it will appear, no, it is not so. How? Because a person who holds a beautiful poetry in his heart, say Valmiki sans Ramayana, Valmiki plus Ramayana, so the answer will be obvious that in Ramayana we have Valmiki plus Ramayana. But Valmiki without the Ramayana sitting in a state of quiet meditation is Valmiki to everybody's guess. He is still the same. So this is something which even pure common sense and logic will tell us, that creation, divine himself increases through the creation. It's a paradox. It's not increased in terms of any outer labels or qualifications. So the unmanifest is already there in the manifestation. But manifestation in the unmanifest is held back. So if you unite with the unmanifest, you can, that Sri Krishna says, ultimately you will begin to develop some kind of a sympathy and compassion towards manifested things. You will see the same divine inside, but it's a very difficult path. First of all, why it is difficult path to seek after the Brahman? Because it looks very nice. You pay up money and you practice meditation. You are given a course. Now start doing it. Now everybody who sincerely meditates, tries to meditate, knows that it's very far from closing the eyes and counting your breaths and, you know, trying to fix the mind. Very different from just having a very good sleep. It's something too profound. It's not easy to really stay, practice meditation. Now, also because the moment we start that the divine is a featureless, formless existence, so then, well, as is our faith, so is the response. The mountain summits do not throw a rope for the climber. They just tell you, come up. If you can reach, reach. So the Gita says it's a much more difficult path, because then you don't get any support from the unmanifest. Unmanifest is unmanifest. Manifestation is out. There is no support from the manifest to the manifestation. Second. And he says that is also okay if it is a difficult path, you don't get support, but you really get the divine in completeness. He says, no, you don't get in completeness. So it's an imperfect path. Now, after all this, and as I said, why it is incomplete and imperfect? Because if you go into unmanifest, you merge and you are out. But you don't understand the secret which is in the manifestation. So in the manifestation, one can touch the unmanifest. But in the unmanifest, you are also entered into that undifferentiated state. So that's why the Gita says, what I am telling you, Arjun, is the easier path, the swifter path, the more complete path, and the perfect path. Because perfection cannot be by excluding one whole part of creation. By its nature, we can't say, I want to create a perfect society, but in this society, these people will not live. So then, where is perfection? I can't say that I want to have a perfect home. But in this home, I am the only boss. And others who disagree, go out. Now, that's not perfection. So this is where he says perfect in that sense that it includes everything and puts them in the right place as ordained by the divine will. This is the background of this chapter. And the third element is that, you know, what should we do? And Sri Krishna gives a series of practices. And then he says, well, I'll tell you the most easy practice. Let that be the suspense. Because it's an ascending series. I don't want to take away that suspense because it hits you like a, that simple. So, we come to the chapter, the way and the bhakta. So, Arjuna has been given the command. So, what is the command he has been given? He has to now act. He was acting earlier also. But from a new poise. So, first thing is shift of the motive. So, what is that new poise? The disciple, some 7-8 lines below, the disciple has been led away from the old poise of the normal man. And the standards, motives, outlooks, egoistic consciousness of his ignorance. Away from all that had finally failed him in the hour of his spiritual crisis. All that is, so if we believe that those old ways are going to work, then we have not stepped into the yoga, as simple as that. If we believe that the old methods will succeed, we are not into yoga, whatever else we may be doing and trying. So the other day, even regarding Auroville, I was having a discussion. I said, no, we can continue debate and discussion. I said, yes, for the next 7,000 years. So, but it doesn't mean the other way. So one has to discover the new way. And the only new way is by spiritualizing your consciousness. There is no third way. Otherwise, you can continue. Either you can discuss, debate, or you can just bulldoze your way. Either which way, it's what humanity has been doing. There has to be a new way. And that new way, man has to discover. Sri Aurobindo and the mother have given us the yoga. And through the yoga, we have to discover. It's not something like a standard, practice given. Okay, everybody will do these things. So first thing is the motive must change. And when the motive changes, he is not changing the action. He is doing the very action which he wanted to go away from. The very action which on that standing he had rejected. That is the old motive. The terrible function, the appalling labor, he has now been brought to admit and accept on a new inner basis. So what is the new inner basis? A reconciling greater knowledge. So what is the reconciling greater knowledge? That God is in the world. He is not only in the world as a presence. He is in the world as a dynamic force also. So this is the new reconciling knowledge. The old knowledge is world and God. They are two different, separate. The material existence and the spiritual, they are two different. So you can't bridge them based on this, that God is where he is and world is where it is. So we see world as a preparation for finding God. But now this is a reconciling knowledge. There was a movie which was made, Buddha in the Traffic Jam. Of course, it was for a different theme altogether. We can make a movie, God driving the motorcycle or God in the traffic jam or God in the, everywhere, in every situation, everything is there. So, this is the new thing. A spiritual, a high impersonal motive. Anything which is done because of personal gain, personal interest. Mother has used a word, even where you have to do a divine work, you should have disinterestedness. Disinterestedness is not lack of interest. It's like lack of, not because of any personal favor I may get out of it. Or a position I may occupy, or some name I may get out of it. None of these. So it has to be impersonal motive. A spiritual standard of oneness with the will of the divine acting on the world from the fountain light and with the motive power of the spiritual nature. So you have to spiritualize the nature, act under the impulsion of the divine will. This is the new inner principle of works which is to transform the old ignorant action. So, then he describes that what should be a will has to be emptied of egoism, meaning thereby any impulsion of the ego, however pleasing it may look, we have to just hold back, step back. It may be the right thing, still we have to remove that motive. That motive is like a canker inside the fruit. If there is an ambition inside, hidden inside, even though the action may be just the right action, like in Arjun's case, So we have to do a little surgery, wait till that egoistic motive is gone. Otherwise, the action will get corrupted, deformed. At some point, it will get deformed. So, a will acting emptied of egoism and acting only by the command and as an instrumentation of the secret master of works. And instrumentation means command to act, command to stop. It should not be that, no, I am, God has given me this work. Yeah, he may give you a work, he may take it away. That's it. One should be a will emptied of egoism, a divine love whose one aspiration is towards a close intimacy with the Supreme Soul. So why one should act? With only one motive. I want to grow closer and closer to the Mother. This is my way of worshipping her. This is my puja. And through this, I will grow closer to her. With no other motive. As the Mother says, we are here to please your Bindu. Neither ourselves nor others. You see, when we try to please others, we are deviating. When we try to please ourselves, we are deviating. So we are here to please Sri Aurobindo. And finally, an inner all-comprehending unity. So this is the new foundation. So now Arjun raises the question. And the question is that with all these foundation, he asks, it's on the next page, yeah. But before that, there are some very beautiful sentences. That Shubhinda speaks of what has been revealed to Arjuna as the Paramatma, Parameshwara. And we'll turn the page, yes. So, page 398. The liberation of the Gita is not a self-oblivious abolition of the soul's personal being in the absorption of the one. So, removing the ego is not equivalent to annulling the individual. So, there are these two individualities within us. One is the surface egoistic individuality. That, its motives, meaning thereby my name, my surname, my background, my this, my that, my qualifications, all the things that we carry on our bio data and our credit card and all that has to go. But there is a true individuality, which is the soul within us, the jivatma, the psychic being. That should not be annulled, because that is the nodus through which the divine will act. So, soul's personal being, sayujya mukti, it is all kinds of union at once. There is an entire unification with the Supreme Godhead in a sense of being and intimacy of consciousness and identity of bliss. Sayujya, Brahma Bhut, to become like Brahman. So here it's the union in the essence of being. The individual soul becomes one in its, it always knows the divine is always there and it's one with in its being with the divine, with the source. So obviously it is one part of the union. Then there is Salokya, for it is said, thou shalt dwell in me. And then there is Samipya. There is an embrace of the liberated spirit by its divine lover and the enveloping self of its infinitude, Samipya. There is an identity of the soul's liberated nature with the divine nature, Sadrishya. For the perfection of the free spirit is to become even as the divine, Madbhavam Agatah. And to be one with him in the law of its being and the law of its works and nature. Sadharmyam Agata. So this is the ultimate, to become even as the divine in one's nature. So all kinds of fulfillment sought by different paths are already there. Then he just touches upon that the orthodox yoga of knowledge aims at sayujya, melting into the divine. So the orthodox yoga of adoration, love seeks for Salokya and Samipya. And the traditional yoga of knowledge seeks for Sadharmya. So here all of them come together. Now Arjuna is made to raise the question. So this question is, he asks, on page 399 we have the question of Arjuna somewhere in the middle. That's how the 12th chapter actually begins. It begins. This is the entry point into the 12th chapter. What is the question he asks? Those devotees, page 399, somewhere in the middle, those devotees who thus by a constant union seek after thee, Tvam, and those who seek after the unmanifest, immutable, which of these have the greater knowledge of yoga? So, in a way, in the first six chapters, in the sixth chapter, Sri Krishna has hinted at it. He speaks of in the self, then in me. So there, that first you might get the knowledge, you must pass through the immutable Brahman, you must be freed of egoism, I-ness, minus, then you are in the, you are, then in me you have to fix your consciousness. That's how he, but here he raises this question that who is greater of the two? Because what the Gita is offering is, thou, he says in substance, art the supreme source and origin of all beings, a presence immanent in all things, a power pervading the universe with thy forms, a person manifest in thy vibhutis, manifest in creatures, manifest in nature, seated as the Lord of works in the world and in our hearts by thy mighty world yoga. As such, I have to know, adore, unite myself with thee in all my being, consciousness, thoughts, feelings and actions, satat yoga. So he has understood. He says that this I have understood. All this in the creation and you are in all creatures everywhere. But in the neighboring Gurukul, they are teaching something else. They are teaching all this is still illusion. This is Maya. Maybe the Lord's Maya, but you are under the spell of illusion. Basically, if you want that full, the truth, you have to come out from that school. Here we have the postgraduate classes, where you are taught this entire thing. Okay, fine. Good for the play, but a illusory play. Come out of it and become one with the unmanifest. So he asks a question. Arjun is not shown as in the Mahabharata as somebody who is very fond of reading, and that time it was not through reading but through the forest sages, because they were traveling in one. So they met many sages. So from many of them they have heard about the immutable Brahman, and it's quite likely that that primed the mind of Arjun at the battlefield, that should I or should I not fight. So he asks him, but what then of this immutable who never manifests, never puts on any form, stands back and apart from all action, enters into no relation with the universe or with anything in it, is eternally silent and one and impersonal and immobile. This eternal self is the greater principle. According to all current notions and the Godhead in the manifestation is an inferior figure. See, this is what we keep hearing. Any form and name, including Rama, Krishna, all of them. And if you go to a typical Advaita Vedantin, he will say, yes, you ask them, why are you worshipping them? So they will say they are a path. They are required for the human consciousness like a crutch. So many of these traditional people who are into that Jnana Yoga, and you'll see Zen Buddhism, and as I was mentioning last time, another person who was unfortunately compared with Sri Aurobindo. Again, traditional yoga of knowledge. So traditional yoga of knowledge is that whatever crutch you use, including the guru, at some point you have to dump that and become one with that. This is the traditional teaching if you go strictly follow it. So there are Zen stories of that kind. It's a modification, and many, many people would say that. That, okay, guru will lead you up to a point and then you have to pass beyond into the merger. So, is that so? He says, that is greater. You are telling me, what you are telling me is okay, I agree. But isn't there something still greater beyond you, which you are not disclosing? To this question, Krishna replies with an emphatic decisiveness. Now comes his reply. Those who found their mind in me and by constant union, possessed of a supreme faith, seek after me, I hold to be the most perfectly in union of yoga. So he makes it very clear that if you're asking me, I would say that, well, and he will justify it also rationally, that they are the ones, because this whole creation, Shubhendu says very interestingly, he says, what is the original will for creation at all? Now we say that we want to go back, or some people want to go back, but what was the original impulsion? So you have to catch that thread. That's why, because that is the will of the Lord which is expressing itself in this creation. That will was not just to have a game and then call it quits when there is, or bring lot of suffering and pain. So that would be absurd. So there is something very missing. So this whole thing has been created, as the mother says, for multiplying the delight of existence. So he says, if you ask me, who is the supreme yogi, who is by constant union possessed of a supreme faith, seek after me, I hold to be the most perfectly in union of yoga. So they are the consciousness seeking after the Lord, full of faith, and therefore through a constant remembrance or practice is in union with the Lord. The perfect union is that which meets the divine at every moment, in every action, and with all the integrality of the nature. There is nothing in this world, no movement, no activity, in which, if we go back to its source, the divine is not present in one way or the other. And this can go to any extent. Shobindo, in the synthesis of yoga, even goes on to say, even the left hand tantra, which was rash and premature and bold attempt, they were not mistaken in the idea, but they fell very badly because they didn't know the process, or, you know, because ultimately, even the activity which you, and we can take it in very simple way to understand it, like what is anger? Anger has to be cast away from nature, no doubt about it. But does anger has its origin somewhere in the divine? You see that there is something known as the Tandav of Shiva. But Shiva does it consciously. And asuras do it unconsciously. Therefore this becomes evil. So Kali, we don't use the word anger. That divine wrath. Even in human beings you will see an equivalent. The mother and Shubhendu speak of the psychic wrath. When something which hurts the divine, something, you know, there was a letter, I think it was, it's there in Amal Kiran's book, whether Amal Kiran wrote it, I think he only had written it, in the book, The Mother, Past, Present, Future. He says, when I read a particular book, he speaks of a particular book, I don't know which one, which had sort of very trivialized or said things about Mother Shubhendu. He says, I felt within my heart a great burning fire, and it was, there was as if I want to destroy that that being and that book and everything, and I felt it burning inside me, and I spent a sleepless night. And he asked mother, what is this? She said, it is the fire born out of psychic wrath, and it will continue to act till the thing is destroyed. It's there in Mother, The Mother, Past, Present and Future. So there is an equivalent, but here there is no egoism. It's not because I am personally hurt, because somebody has insulted me, it's I am angry, or it's because my guru. It's not about my guru. It's about the feeling that there is something which the divine has sacrificed himself in matter, and when that is trivialized. And there are several examples of this if we see in Ramayana and the Mahabharata, which human beings find very difficult to understand. Even mother once told someone who had spoken all kinds of things about the mother, and the next day when he came, his knee was swollen and very bad shape. So he asked mother, have you? He said, no, I don't. I'm always full of compassion. But you know, there are the gods who don't tolerate this. Who don't like this. Their job description. You tell something to Ram, Ram will is all complete smiling. He will say, you may say any number of words, let's meet in combat. But Hanumanji is not going to spare, because that's Hanuman Swadharma. So there is an equivalent. Even for sexuality, two things which are so low. You see, everything you can trace back, that's the principle of transformation. Shubhendu says in 49 essays, he says, all animality must go, all kinds of things must go. Then crudeness must go, everything must go. Then he says, but there is a truth of it in the principle of Ishvara and Ishwari. Now just imagine. So then comes everything. If we take up any movement, so we have to remove completely the lower form. But if you trace it to its origin, including attachment, so that's why this is attachment, best way of removing attachment is by turning it toward the divine. Attachment to the divine. Desire, hunger for the infinite. Ambition, true spiritual greatness, which is the glory of the Lord. Everything, every movement. So, to meet the divine in everything, Arjuna is called upon to destroy a whole civilization. So, even there, that, you know, the dance of Shiva. Now, again, because when it is wrongly practiced, it obviously causes a great downfall. So, first is stability in the immutable Brahman. That is the foundation. Then this higher truth can manifest. So, he says, but then he says, but those who seek after a hard ascent after the indefinable, unmanifest, immutable alone arrive, says the Godhead to me. You read Ramayana, you may not know about Valmiki, but you will ultimately, it is all the poet who has expressed himself. When we read Savitri, which is a manifestation of the divine, we come close to Sri Aurobindo and the mother, simply because it has emerged from his consciousness through the word body and the whole life and all relations and everything is there. You want to understand Sri Aurobindo's heart and the mother's heart? Read Savitri. Because that's where we see. Otherwise you can do guesswork. Sri Aurobindo doesn't smile. Who knows? When you read Savitri, you say, oh my God, all these shades of humanity, human life is carrying within himself. So, and puts them each in its place. So he says, for they are not mistaken in their aim, but they follow a more difficult and a less complete and perfect path. So he makes it very clear. It's okay, they can follow, they will come to me. But the path is less complete and less perfect because they cut creation into two and God is one single reality. If you really take as Advaita, then how can you say this is illusion and the divine consciousness is beyond? You have to include this. Then there will be Advaita in the true sense. Otherwise it won't be Advaita. It would be always a world which is temporary or whatever it is, and there is the divine beyond or the one consciousness beyond. After a few lines, it offers no hold to the mind. It can only be gained by a motionless spiritual impersonality and silence, and those who follow after it alone have to restrain altogether and even draw in completely the action of the mind and senses. So he says, look here, to start with, it's difficult. It sounds very nice. Even just imagine, meditate on Brahman. No support to the mind. Don't even think of space and time. Meditate on Brahman. Immediately the mind will want, yes, but Brahman what? All pervading reality. Absolute. Nothing there will be to. So that's why people who seek after it enter into a, if they sincerely seek, many, many years, they may enter into a state of impersonality. See, Raman Maharshi took 17 years, just, you know, then he, that awakening comes. That, you know, so he says they can do that, but they must understand. And then he says, well, after they discover, so it offers no hold to the mind. It can only be gained by motionless spiritual impersonality. But then he says, after they discover, they do develop, you know, something with the world. But still by the equality of their understanding and by their seeing of oneself in all things and by the tranquil benignancy of silent will for the good of all existences, they too meet me in all objects and creatures. So this is the saintliness and the sages who are calm, who are engaged in good of the world. He says, to some extent they will, in the manifestation also, be helpful. But this is a less direct and more adverse way. It is not the full and natural movement of the spiritualized human nature, because it's something you have to do other than what you are doing. That's why people ask, when do you get time to do yoga? They often ask, sir, we don't have time to do yoga. So, well, if you really want to do yoga and if you have no time, welcome to Sri Aurobindo's yoga. Only yoga. And of course, the yoga of the Gita, where you can play tennis and be doing yoga. You could drive a car and be doing yoga. I mean, you could do practically anything and you could be doing yoga. But yes, inwardly you have to get many things out. The easier way of the Gita leads more rapidly, naturally. This is important because it takes into account the natural turn of human life. And normally, to the same absolute liberation. A few lines below. The yogin of exclusive knowledge imposes on himself a painful struggle with the manifold demands of his nature. Because ultimately, you know, you have to get rid of all these things. Everything in creation. And the seeds are inside. You get rid of people. Then you realize that you are still attached to the rasgulla which is in your mind. How do you do the detachment from the rasgulla? Then you start getting from people everything. So ultimately, you know, it's a difficult path, he says. Painful struggle. He denies them even their highest satisfaction and cuts away from him even the upward impulses of his spirit whenever they imply relations or fall short of a negating absolute. See, this is so beautiful. How do we evolve toward the Godhead? There are tendencies in nature which can go to what extent? Let's say human love. Human love ignorantly takes the form of human attachment. It becomes a great bondage, a source of suffering, struggle. So what is the typical sannyasi's method? You'll say cut off. It's all ignorance, all illusion. But then you go through these stories of human love. Mother says, even in a story of human love where the psychic has manifested, it makes it so beautiful. There are stories even of Rama and Sita. If you look at it just as a story of love, or Radha and Krishna, what story? Or Helen and Paris, for the sake of love, even nation, the civilization is brought down. Now you see that, and you see at any length, stories of sacrifice where human beings have thrown themselves off. Shivaji. Now these are not things which we can just trivialize by saying they are all illusions. Imagine if none of these people were there and right from beginning they said, no, we want immutable Brahman. This earth would have been ruled by asuras and rakshasas and destroyed how many times, we don't know. So there are upward impulses of nature. Many discoveries, even in the field of knowledge. Marie Curie sacrificed her own life for, you know, X-ray radiation. So all these things, there are even within the realm of human nature upward impulses. It must complete its course. So that's what he is telling us. The living way of the Gita, on the contrary, finds out the most intense upward trend of all our being, and by turning it Godward, uses knowledge, will, feeling, and the instinct for perfection as so many Pyuza wings of a mounting liberation. That even when you want to fight, fight for truth. Let it be a fight for something noble, high. Then you still want to fight, fight with your nature and master it. You see, that's how it proceeds. So this is how the master continues. And he concludes, page 402. This then is the swiftest, largest and greatest way. On me, says the Godhead, to the soul of man, repose all thy mind and lodge all thy understanding in me. I will lift them up, bathe in the supernal blaze of the divine love and will and knowledge to myself from whom these things flow. He says, instead of seeking the immutable, unmanifest, all that, you repose on me. That's the mystery of the avatar and the mystery of God's name. Because he assumes a form and name so that we can be at once freed from the grip of form and name in an ignorant way, and at the same time discover him in every form and name, which is so beautiful. People quarrel so much, you know, sometimes in a family setting. Just teach them, see, other person is also God, huh? Be careful. Simple advice can change life. And he says that there will be difficulties. Yoga is never a cakewalk. No doubt on this way too there are difficulties, for there is the lower nature with its fears or dull downward gravitation, the grip of the ego. So what we have to discard is all this lower nature which distort us, desire, all this. He says those things will pull you again and again. And then comes this Master Ascending series, page 402, about 10-12 lines from below. But still, by the practice of union and by constant repetition of the experience, that highest spirit grows upon the being and takes permanent possession of the nature. Meaning thereby, every time you suffer a fall or a backward pull, don't lament, don't complain, don't blame yourself or others, don't say I am done with, don't say that I am unfit, don't say I am a failure. Get up and say, ma, 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 I am mother's child. Shivinda says that to Niruddha, precisely this. That if you fall on the road, don't keep blaming the road and government and God knows what. Get up, brush your pant and start walking. So this is what is the constant abhyas. And if one does it, because there will be many times one will slip. That's okay, that's understood. But every time one falls, one then gradually it becomes a second nature and then your first nature. So even while you are falling, you are saying, ma, ma, ma. And she holds you. So by the practice, but still by the practice, that higher spirit grows upon the being. Now he says, is this also found too difficult? Now comes the suspense thriller, which I said I have left. If this also is difficult, then the way is simple, to do all actions for the sake of the Lord of the action. So that every outward going movement of the mind shall be associated with the inner spiritual truth of the being. What she told Udhar, he said, how am I progressing, ma? He said, you could have done much better, huh? What did I do? She asked, what do you do in the morning? I get up, then I go to the washroom, then I brush my teeth. How do you brush your teeth? This way, all wrong. So to brush the teeth morning when we get up, like she told to Surendra Joharji's wife, you call me for 10 minutes, ma, 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 start your day with that. Then as we are going to the washroom, I'm brushing my teeth, mother, for you, I'm taking a wash for you. Now, slowly it gets inbuilt into the system. You dress up for the mother, you go out for work for the mother. So everything is directed automatically. It doesn't matter, there is an outward activity, that's fine. That's not really relevant. But I am doing it for you. So he says this is the second thing. If that is difficult, to be constantly, the mind is turned toward the divine, it's difficult, then do it this way. This is the simpler. Direct all action to the Lord. Then the presence of the Purushottama will grow upon the natural man till he is filled with it and becomes a Godhead and a spirit. All life will become a constant remembering of God, and perfection too will grow, and the unity of the whole existence of the human soul with the supreme existence. If you keep calling her, if you keep turning all action, then after some time you'll see she's sitting in the car with you, going on the scooter with you, traveling on the flight with you, because she will take over your life. And life will grow beautiful. But then this is also not easy, no? To remember and offer. So he says, but it may be that even this constant remembering of God and lifting up of our works to him is felt to be beyond the power of the limited mind. Because in its forgetfulness, it turns to the act and its outward object, and will not remember to look within and lay our every movement on the divine altar of the spirit. Then the way is to control the lower self in the act and do works without desire of the fruit. Now here he says, all fruit has to be renounced, to be given up to the power. This is the simplest, the nishkam karma. Whatever I am doing, I'll do my best. Whatever be my inner motive, I have forgotten God. But result is entirely in the hands of the divine. And whatever you decide, if you give success, fine. If you give failure, fine. If praise comes or insult comes, fortune, misfortune, all is given. So thus he speaks of the ascending series, the abhyas, and here, but more powerful, few lines below, but more powerful still is the giving up of the fruit of one's works, because that immediately destroys all causes of disturbance, which are because of desire. So if you ask how to establish peace, get rid of desire. Desires make one restless. If you get rid of desire, there is peace. Fundamental peace. So nishkam karma destroys that completely. And then comes toward the end, then what will be the divine nature? How to recognize the bhakta? Somebody who is jumping so many hours, obviously not a man who has taken sannyas, who is on the banks of Rishikesh, on the Ganga. I mean, they are all nice people, again. But is that where you will find the bhakta, or the one united with the divine? Now it is not just about bhakta. So Arjun asks, what are the signs of such a person, of a god lover? Will he be always wearing this kind of dress and doing some kind of bhajan and kirtan? What will be the sign? Will he be using a mark of vermilion or white? Now Sri Krishna gives in a number of verses. First he says equality, desireless and freedom of the spirit. And then page 404. First, an absence of egoism, of I-ness and my-ness. Nirmamo nirahankara. This is the first sign. That doesn't mean he'll not use the word I. He will say, you know, this person whom you know as, you know, Alok Pandey. No, he is not a twisted brain. But that I does not have I. I wrote the book. I did this. I am an instrument of God. All this nonsense. I am Mr. So-and-so. All this goes out. Because he is free from all I-ness and my-ness. The bhakta of the Purushottama is one who has a universal heart and mind which has broken down all the narrow walls of the ego. So he is not in competition with anyone. He is not into anybody's ambition or occupying somebody's seat. Whatever the divine gives him, whatever place to occupy, he is happy. He does not say, no, no, I don't want that. Even that is I-ness. He occupies if the divine gives. He leaves it if the divine says, okay, now your time is over. Either which way, he is fine. So, and therefore he has a universal love and a universal compassion. He will have friendship and pity. So universal love and compassion is described as Maitri Karuna Evascha. He has no enemies. The moment you say, my side, my way or highway, either you are a friend of mine or you are an enemy of mine, all this means that you are far from the yoga. He will have friendship and pity for all beings and hate for no living things. For he is patient, long-suffering, enduring, a well of forgiveness. A desireless content is his, a tranquil equality to pleasure and pain, suffering and happiness, the steadfast control of self, and the firm, unshakable will and resolution of the yogin, and a love and devotion which gives up the whole mind and reason to the Lord. Mind and reason. I don't know why Lord is doing this. I think it would have been better if he did that. Fool. Tell the mind. He knows better. ask that I want to understand why you are doing what you are doing. That you have the right to aspire for knowledge. In fact, if you are one with him, you will automatically know. He will reveal to you his purpose of the virtuous failing in life. You will automatically know that this is the best thing which is happening to him. His purpose, which is served by suffering in the good while the evil is triumphing. You will understand immediately. But to doubt God's wisdom because he is not acting according to our standards, so all this goes away. So this tranquil equality to pleasure and pain, the steadfast control of self and the firm unshakable will and resolution of the yogin and the love and devotion. Okay. Or simply, he will be one who is freed from the troubled, agitated lower nature and from its waves of joy and fear and anxiety and resentment and desire, a spirit of calm by whom the world is not afflicted or troubled, nor is he afflicted or troubled by the world, a soul of peace with whom all are at peace. How wonderful this is. I was sharing this example of one of the ashram inmates, Russia, so doesn't know English, but came along with us, and visa is there, everything, but they questioned because no job, nothing. And they held her, started asking her questions. So all this, and Kavita had crossed. So we are waiting anxiously that what has happened, and nobody is there to tell you anything. Then we started doing, mother, what else to do? Yeah, mother. So after some half an hour of interrogation, one of the person comes and asks, who are you? You are supporting? I said, yes. He said, why you are supporting? I said, well, because our friend, so why are you? You have got sufficient money. I told them, yes, see, they counted the money. Why are you supporting? Again the same question. I said, friendship. So he's looking quizzically. I said, actually, you know, we really believe in friendship. Now that must have hit some psychic core. I said, you are talking of friendship? We believe in friendship. We believe in the brotherhood of man. So then he, okay, went away. After some time, both of them came. So I asked that, what were you doing when you were sitting? He said, nothing. Calling mother. I said, you know what may have happened? You would have been deported. So what? Would have gone back. I said, you didn't feel troubled. Why should I be troubled? Mother is there. This is fantastic. One of them even, Madan Gopalji, had that experience. Reservation, no? Divine will take care. See, that thing, you know, which comes where you are absolutely free from all agitation, which the mind brings. Of course, this comes easier to the simple heart. And very difficult for the brain which is developed, because that's how it is. So, all these are the foundations. And then, he, towards the closing, he has abolished the distinction between fortunate and unfortunate happenings. Last four lines on page 404. Because his devotion receives all things equally as good from the hands of his eternal lover and master. If something comes to you, you receive it. It's a gift from her. If something goes from you, it is from her. To her. No gift is given to a person with the idea of receiving something. You wait for that inner inspiration and act accordingly. The God lover, dear to God, is a soul of wide equality, equal to friend and enemy, equal to honor and insult, pleasure and pain, praise and blame, grief and happiness, heat and cold, to all the troubles with opposite affections, the normal nature. He will have no attachment to person or thing, place or home. So he's all this anameya, nirashraya, but he is having love for all. See, this absence of attachment is not equivalent to absence of love. He has a universal love. He will be content and well satisfied with whatever surroundings, whatever relation men adopt to him, whatever station or fortune he will keep a mind firm in all things. So this is the foundation. And toward the end, and the crown of this equality is love founded on knowledge, fulfilled in instrumental action. So what kind of love there would be for the divine when you refuse to serve the Lord? So it should be fulfilled in action. It should be founded on the knowledge that divine is everywhere and in all beings. And now comes the last master line. This is the foundation, the condition, the means by which the supreme spiritual perfection is to be won. And those who have it in any way are all dear to me, says the goddess. Bhaktiman me priya. Any of these things somebody is practicing. Even as he says, the most powerful aid, minimum is, you know, nishkam karma. Any of these things one is practicing is dear to me, remembering me, offering things to me. But exceedingly dear are those souls nearest to the Godhead, whose love of me is completed by the still wider and greatest perfection of which I have just shown to you the way and the process. So what are these bhaktas? These are the bhaktas who make the Purushottama their one supreme aim and follow out with the perfect faith and exactitude the immortalizing dharma described in this teaching. What is this immortalizing dharma? The dharma that liberates us from all other dharmas and brings us nearest to the Lord. There is only one dharma ultimately left. Whatever brings you closer to the divine. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. Who have surrendered themselves completely to the divine. Who live for the divine. Who breathe the divine. Who have no other aim except serve the divine and to be with the divine. So he says that is the highest crown of the yoga. So this is the difference, so different from all our traditional idea of bhakti. Jumping, dancing, screaming, visiting temples, all those things. They have their own place. But in Shri Krishna's words, what really is the bhakti of Shri Krishna or bhakti of the divine? Because here Shri Krishna is the Purushottama, the supreme who is revealing the Gita through Shri Krishna in the persona of Shri Krishna. So this is the way and the bhakta and the science of the God lover. Chema.